You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver.
Well, I guess we've all gotten some new Apple gear, those of us that went ahead and ordered it. So we've had the weekend to sort of play around, test it out, see how we're liking it. And I can't wait to talk about some of this new stuff, some of our new toys.
I got nothing. I got orders. That's all I got. I got orders.
And I was the dummy that actually went and braved the lines on Friday morning.
Yeah, I've just got orders too.
Oh, wow. Actually went and bought it like live in person? Like you talked to somebody?
Yeah, it was actually a pretty pleasant experience. I went up there around 11 o'clock. They were taking names and telephone numbers and what product you wanted. And they were giving you a time slot to come back. They offered me 2 p.m. I went at 3:30 because that was better for my work schedule. And I was in and out of there in 20 minutes when I went back at 3:30.
Nice.
We had a work-sponsored outing. We got to see the new Kingsman movie. So as soon as that movie was over, while I was sitting in the movie, my deliveries app went off on my watch, said, hey, your stuff's delivered. So I went straight from the Golden Circle to the UPS store, got my stuff, and I was very, very pleased. It was a nice Friday. The Series 3 watch. Something occurred to me over the course of the summer every year. You know, Brad will try out usually whatever the macOS beta is. Jim and I, at a minimum, will play with the iOS betas. But the watchOS betas are a completely different type of animal because you can't really install that very easily. And if something goes wrong with the process and you brick your watch, you have to send it to Apple to get it fixed. So I don't know about you guys, but that makes me sort of loath to touch it. I don't want to end up in a bad situation with watchOS. So that's why I never really play with the betas.
I mean, the upgrade process is what, an hour and a half? I mean, imagine going through that with every single instance of the beta. It's not like the 2-minute deal with iOS, you know?
It's time consuming.
The mistake I made was not, I didn't brick my watch, but I upgraded the phone. This was, I guess, last year when I had my previous watch. I upgraded the phone. I was like, oh, okay, I'll go ahead and do my watch. And so I did the watch. And then 3 days later, the beta for the iPhone that I'd put installed was so bad. There was something that wasn't working right. I'm like, all right, I'm going to flip it back. So I, you know, did the DFU and I put the whatever it was, I guess iOS 9 back on there. I didn't think about it. I didn't know that this would happen. I went to set the watch back up. It was a brick for like the next month or so. I think it was at least a month before I got my watch working again. It would not connect with the older version of iOS on my phone because I tried to reset it. It was a brick for a month and a half until I got everything back upgraded. So yeah, I guess that's good enough reason right there.
That's another good reason. Those they operate in tandem, the phone and the watch. So that's another reason that you have to be careful with it. That being said, I had nothing. I had no expectations around watchOS 4. I didn't really know what to expect. I'd read a little, you know, what I had seen. I saw the announcements at WWDC, but I really didn't have that much of a thing to go on as to what to expect. So I was a little bit nervous about that. Once I got it, though, I got to say, it was really a lot different than what I was expecting, and it's taken some getting used to. You know, I'll just sort of go through these pretty quickly if I can. The recently used, so like the dock is no longer horizontal, it's vertical. That was a little bit of a difference.
That's annoying.
It is. It does take some getting used to because you're used to, for the entire time I've had a watch, it's scroll left to right. You know, you just swipe back and forth. That's intuitive. It's what you do on the watch. I mean, the phone, the iPad, going up and down, maybe it's more intuitive on that interface, but it doesn't seem that way.
I just think about the way the crown works and then the up and down with the screen.
No, it probably makes more sense. But when you're used to it, the first time you pull it up, you're like, WTF. And I'm like, where's my stuff?
You're like, my watch is broke.
Because I just upgraded my watch 2 days ago, so I hadn't actually done the watch yet. Yeah, the first time I went to log in the VPN to get my code off my watch, I'm like, where did my dot go? Where is it at? And I'm like trying to figure all this out. I'm like, you're supposed to know this stuff. And I was like, where's this at? And I couldn't find it. And there it was.
For me, I kind of abandoned my original Apple Watch probably 7 or 8 months into owning it. It was just too slow and I didn't care for how it did things. So coming into the Series 3, the new format that Brian's talking about, it seems fairly intuitive to me because I've been so far removed from using the OS that's kind of what felt natural and new and fairly easy to figure out.
Well, I'll say by default, it changes your behavior to use the recently used applications in the dock, which I absolutely hated. And that was one of the first things I had to go and turn off. I have everything in my dock in a certain order, the way that I like it, the way that I use it. And I thought it was kind of really annoying that it just took it upon itself to change it to the recently used. So when I go to walk into the gym to use my watch to authenticate so that I can I can check in. It wasn't there. And it's like, that's one of my most used apps right there, just gone away. So I don't know what the logic is there, but it's, I don't know where they're getting the recently used from, but that wasn't very good. The watch faces are kind of nice. I think, as I understand, there's one Explorer, I guess, is the one that's a Series 3 exclusive. I'm not really sure. That's what I read. It's the one you see that's prominently displayed in the ads with the red hands. I've been trying that one the last day or so. I kind of like it. Very nice. Sort of an understated look to it. I really kind of like it. At home, I'm still using the modular, but usually when I'm out and about during the day, I'm using the Explorer, just trying to get used to it. The Siri watch face, I didn't see that at first. I guess I really never played with adding watch faces in the previous releases. It didn't seem intuitive. I finally figured it out. I went to the app, added the Siri face. That's a little bit different. Having things proactively pop up on your watch that it thinks you're going to need or use. I'm going to have to try that and get used to it. Still not used to it yet. I'm hesitant to change, but I kind of like it.
You feel like you're serving your watch. You're supposed to be here next.
Yeah, you get used to what you see with modular. Like, I like looking down and seeing what the weather is. I like looking down and seeing the activity rings. I like looking down and seeing battery percentage or what my next meeting is. So I'm having to be a little more open-minded about the information that I get from it.
I tried it for about a day. It was just like, I just want my modular back because, you know, I've got it set up exactly like I want. You know, I got my stuff on there. Like you said, you know, I got my meetings. I've got the weather. It just, everything's there that I want, my alarms. And the Siri one, it looks kind of neat, but as we've discussed here many times in the past, I'm not a huge Siri user. I should do more with it, and I have started to do a little more with it. I've played around with some of the playlist and music stuff with Siri. That actually works really well. I've been impressed with that. So we'll see where it goes. The one thing I haven't looked into is when you're playing music, the watch always now like defaults to, hey, this is the music you're playing on the watch face. And I've got to turn that off. And I just haven't gotten into it enough to go in there and turn that off. But that's kind of, I'm a big music listener and it's annoying. So I can't imagine somebody who isn't.
It's one of those things that I think they'll get right in a future release. It is not very well implemented in this release. And I'm a big podcast listener. I listen to podcasts when I'm driving to work. I'll listen to them. Idle moments. Here's what's annoying to me. I get out of the car, right? I'm connected to CarPlay. I have the cable plugged in, the lightning cable. I get out of the car, I unplug the cable. The podcast automatically pauses. I'll hit the lock screen, throw it in my pocket, go walking into the building. I look down to see what time it is, and it still has the now playing screen. I have to manually dismiss that. That's bad. That should be, if there's nothing playing, and let's say it hasn't been playing for 30 seconds, a minute, whatever, take that away. Right? It's clearly not playing. I'm not using it. I don't need to control it. There should be some interval where it says, okay, this hasn't been in use in so long and it should be user adjustable. Make this go away. I mean, it's nice when I'm at the gym, when I'm doing strength training. A lot of times I like bringing that up. So if there's a commercial that comes on, I can just reach down and swipe it away or whatever, you know, jump through it. But it's really, really inconvenient absolutely any other time. So that's, I agree with you. It's useful in the abstract. Implementation kind of stinks right now.
Yeah, I this is kind of going into iOS, but I've also noticed the new music stuff in there. So Control Center doesn't necessarily like Spotify near as much as it does Apple Music. So if you're playing on Spotify on your phone, it doesn't automatically show up in Control Center unless you kind of hit pause and play, and then okay, you're playing on Spotify, not on Apple Music. Let me go ahead and switch over to Spotify for you, because it really prefers Apple Music to be able to show in Control Center. So I've noticed that as well. So there's some couple things that are going around there.
Two things you have to get used to: Siri and Apple Music, if you jump on the HomePod train.
Well, speaking of Siri, right? So Jim says that he doesn't use it much. I wasn't a very big user as well, but I have used the daylights out of Siri since getting the watch on Friday. It is for controlling my HomeKit gear. I've got Hue bulbs, I've got Lutron Caseta switches and dimmers, and it is so much faster and so much more responsive than any of my Echo Dots, not only in just acknowledging the commands, but actually turning on lights and turning them off. Sometimes I'll have, you know, a 1 to 3 second delay on commands for the Echo Dots, and these are just like, Siri, turn on nightstand. And by the time she said done, there's already light in the room. The speed of this watch is really impressive.
I can agree with you there on that. That's the one thing I do use Siri for, is to turn my lights on and off here in my apartment. I've got one huge strand of LED lights that go around the whole loft, and I can just say turn them on or turn them off. And I have noticed with the update, yeah, it's super quick. Almost as soon as you finish, on come the lights. So that's been nice.
Yeah, I've long said Siri with HomeKit is really good. I saw some dunderhead on Twitter the other day say that Apple clearly doesn't care about HomeKit. It's like, what are you talking about? That's spoken like somebody who's never used it, because the implementation for me has been, that's one of the better things that they have going on right now, is that stuff works really, really well, particularly the more involved you get in it.
If CarPlay was only as good as HomeKit.
Oh my goodness, yes. Instead of it just being a mirror of what your phone screen is, they really, man, I have many suggestions for Apple on that one. It leaves much to be desired in that respect. CarPlay. The cellular option too. Let's delve into that for a moment. Verizon was slammed for me on Friday. I had to try about 10 times to activate that thing before it would finally take, which really surprised me. This was like Friday afternoon, and it took a long time. So far, I don't even think that I've actually been on cellular yet. I've transferred less than a megabyte. I'm looking at this like, oh my God, $10 a month is a ripoff for what I'll probably end up using this.
I had heard that they were going to do a 3-month trial for people who wanted to add it to the watch. Is that true?
Verizon is, and I think AT&T is as well, I'm pretty sure. What's been your experience with that, Jason?
So, I mean, I'm using very little data. The data that I have used has been because I deliberately turned off the phone just to see what would happen.
Then it went to your home Wi-Fi. That's what it did to me.
Right. I did get a chuckle on Friday when I sent you the message that said, oh, my activation went super smooth, and you were like, what?
Yeah, it kept doing weird sorts of errors. I couldn't get the Verizon setup process was non-intuitive. It puts your phone number in there, but it puts it really, really light in the dialog box. So when I'm first glancing at it, I'm like, does it want me to type it in? And I touched the little tap target, couldn't get a keyboard. That was just silliness on my part, I guess. It wasn't a well-designed UI, but then when I tried to go and actually use it, it still was just, it would say, I'm looking for your watch, can't find it, go away, try again later, some nondescript error, but it finally did. One of the things that kind of surprised me is that in all the advertising, you see the cellular indicator on the watch face itself. That doesn't seem to be the case. That was kind of surprising for me. If you go into Control Center, you see whether or not you're on cellular or Wi-Fi, whether or not it's activated, but I got no indication. Now, maybe I should just leave my phone at home and take a walk around the neighborhood and see if that's the case, but so far, that was a little weird because you see it so prominently displayed in all the advertising, and yet it didn't happen for me at all. So I thought something was, you know, something. Did I not configure something? I don't know what's going on.
Come on, man. Do some exercise, Brian. Go walk around the neighborhood. Come on.
Oh, Brian exercises.
You mean go outside?
I get.
I'm messing with him. I know he does.
I get taunted every day with Brian has just completed his workout. Brian has just closed all his rings.
And that's usually by 3 p.m. every day.
No, it's Brian has broken his record streak. Brian has broken his record streak.
Does it actually say that to you guys?
Yeah, it taunts the F out of us.
What it really needs to do is do the shame, shame, shame.
That's what it should do.
It turns into the nagging mother. Why can't you exercise like Brian does? He finds time to go and do it.
And actually, Siri just comes on and says, hey, get out of your apartment.
Well, so speaking of working out, the heart rate app is pretty nice. When I was first on the original Apple Watch, when I first got it, sometimes it would take 5 to 8 seconds to show what the current heart rate was. And this one is pretty instantaneous. I really like that the resting heart rate function that we talked about a week ago, as well as the walking heart rate function, those are both dynamic. They don't actually require you to invoke an activity on the watch for them to work. So it's kind of gathering those statistics throughout the day and then being able to report them to you live as you go.
So at some point, you're supposed to opt in, I guess, if you're interested to do that heart study. At what point do you do that? I mean, you could do that now. Have they made that URL or whatever a public thing?
I haven't seen that pop up across my plethora of RSS feeds that I follow, but I'm definitely going to Google and look into that, because I would love to, as much as I've been doing this, as much as I've been closing those rings and working out every day, I would love to be able to submit my data as part of that. So let's see. The workout app will now display as your primary screen when you're working out and mute all notifications, which is very, very useful. I hated glancing down to see what my heart rate was, to see, you know, Outlook going off 50 times or text messages. I will notice that a lot of my applications do open very, very fast. So checking text messages on my watch is far faster than it was, even on the Series 2. And Telegram opens pretty rapidly. I did have a little hiccup with it, but it works fine. Outlook works fine on it. I'm really liking it. It's actually very, very fast. I mean, this is really what the Apple Watch should have been from its first iteration. I hate to say that, having owned 3 of them now, but really this is what it should have been. So I've been very pleased in the couple of days that I've been using it.
So thumbs up, Brad. You chose correctly.
Yeah, you picked the right time to jump on.
Woot woot.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the device has arrived and something that, you know, I can live with for a couple of years. So that's one of the reasons why I chose to go stainless this time over aluminum, was I don't feel like I'm going to feel super compelled next year to have to get, you know, Series 4 or whatever. So if I can get two good solid years out of this one, I feel like I'll have gotten my money's worth out of the stainless watch.
I think the moment that it becomes completely sort of its independent device, that'll be the time that I really splurge and either go for the ceramic or one of those that are really nice. Let's see, what was something else that I wanted to mention? Oh, the 3D animations for the achievements are pretty nice. I have noticed that when I close in the rings or I finish a workout or something like that, it fires up like a little fireworks animation. Have you guys seen that as well? Have you noticed the blazing on the watch?
I can see doing that for, you know, a week, maybe two, and then after that point, it would be, you know, an annoyance.
No, it just shows off, right? I mean, before it would just have a little solid graphic, but now there's a little bit of flourish and flair. I mean, it's not like a selling point, but it was kind of nice to see them put a little more effort into it to make it look a little bit nicer. So we haven't talked about the inductive charging for the watch. Jason and I were messaging back and forth about trying out the watch. I was afraid I was going to damage it. Putting the watch on the Mophie that I got for the iPhone 8. I did try it, just sat it down there briefly just to see if it would come on. It did not. So it doesn't use the same sort of inductive charging that the iPhone 8 and iPhone 10 will use. So I did try it though, but only the Series 3 is going to support air power when that's finally released, it looks like. So none of the previous models will support it. I don't think this is going to be off the Qi standard. I think this is going to be some new thing that they're doing, but they haven't really been quiet about that. They've pretty much indicated they were doing something different.
How do you pronounce that? Qi standard. Okay. So you went with Space Black again, Brian, and Jason, you went with the stainless?
I did.
Steel?
I did.
Indeed. I've had my Darth Vader watch for all of the iterations. The stainless has always looked good to me. Even the plain stainless, I had sort of noodled about getting way back when I got my first one. But since I'm normally rocking the black bands and whatnot, I don't know. You can't go wrong with black.
I love the black sport band. I probably wear that black sport band more than I do anything. Even with my stainless watch, I still have my black sport band from my first aluminum one that I use all the time. I only wear this Apple Watch one with the dots on it when I'm, you know, messing around or on the weekend or something. It really doesn't go with anything I wear at work. But I have all my Apple Watch bands in my laptop bag and my little gear case. Oh, look at you. So I have a case in my like you know the case with like the little straps where you can put all your stuff in. So I keep all my watch bands in there. So this weekend I was doing a lot of stuff outside. I switched over to the one red and one blue, like on each side, just because Ole Miss didn't lose this weekend. So
yeah, because they didn't play.
Exactly.
I will say I noticed that the watch has a lift complication now, which I didn't know they had before. If that's something you want, you can actually just summon a lift from the watch face at any time without even going into the app. But you can use Siri for that as well. One final thing that I've noticed about the watch, well, there's a couple more. Apparently, if you're going cellular only, there's still some things that the watch can't do. Like you can't really depend on a lot of the iCloud functionality. You can't dictate a note. I think it was one of the things that you couldn't do. You can't use third-party integrations and those types of things.
It seems like that would be something you would really want to be able to do, is dictate a note, right? Because you don't have your phone to type with. That's like one of the most obvious things that you would think would work if you don't have your phone with you. How do you input if you don't have your phone with you?
Can you do a voice memo?
You can text yourself. You know, honestly, I'm not sure, and that seems really strange to me.
That sounds dirty.
I'm hoping.
Go text yourself.
I'm hoping that they will fix that in a future update.
Oh, seriously. I mean, that does seem like a glaring omission there, that you can't use the dictation if you don't have your phone, because if you don't have your phone, that's when you would want to use the dictation. Yeah, that's interesting. Good to know for listeners out there.
I'm thinking their primary use case is going to be phone and text is really what they're using the cellular for, and Apple Music, apparently, for some reason, because you got to have that. So that seems a little bit strange to me.
The killer app.
When is that software update going to be available for you to be able to stream Apple Music straight to your watch?
They said October, hopefully. Even the commercials, I think, say that it's you know.
Wow, it doesn't even do that yet either.
Nope.
Y'all bought a beta.
Yeah, they got them a beta watch, didn't they?
Alpha at this point. Moving on to Apple TV 4K. So I got mine on Friday. Yay. However, I still don't have a 4K TV, so I can't really put it through its paces. But Jason, you have, and you got one on Friday as well. So tell us about your experience with it.
Everything, regardless of whether you're using 4K or not, like I can tell a pretty decent speed difference in just navigating the menus. So, you know, switching between the ESPN app or Netflix or Plex, right? Just all points of navigation are considerably quicker. From the 4K content that I've looked at, the nicest thing is my only comparison previously is my Sony TV has Android TV built in, and the Android TV has 4K versions of Netflix and Amazon streaming on it. And you've got to assume that the processing power that's in the Apple TV 4K is considerably more than the chip that they put in the Sony TV to begin with to handle that.
Indeed, it's an iPad Pro processor. It's an A10, so.
Right. So all aspects of that are considerably faster. Just the interface flows considerably better. One kind of neat trick that I did was to see if my stereo system would actually dual pass 4K. So in my den, I've got a 65 4K HDR, and I've also got a 49 4K HDR for viewing football games, you know, multiple games at the same time. But I can also display the same movie if I want to. So the Apple TV was able to power two 4K monitors at once. So I streamed Baby Driver and had 114 inches of 4K HDR playing in the dining room, or in the den, I should say.
But your receiver is what's driving those displays, right?
Yeah. So it's one HDMI coming out of the back of the Apple TV to the back of the receiver. And then the receiver, I guess, is driving that second one. But still pretty neat to be able to have, you know, kind of a multi-screen home theater all in the same room.
And are you using it on gigabit, or are you using it on the Wi-Fi?
So good mention on the gigabit. Yes, it's plugged in to a UniFi switch that's a, you know, gig switch. It's got a gig uplink to, you know, my switch that's in the basement. And in the basement is where I've got my Synology NAS that runs Plex, right? And so sometimes when I was on the 100 meg interface of the previous generation, I would get the message from Plex. Like if you tried to rewind or fast forward, you'd get this pause that would say your connection to the server is not fast enough, right? And I'd kind of chuckle about that because it was a direct connection. Well, I've seen none of that now on the gig interface. So it seems to be that it's keeping up pretty well. I did run, you know, the speed test app to verify that I am getting over 100 meg on it. So my Comcast connection's like 180 down, and I'm seeing 180 directly on the Apple TV.
Very nice.
I will say I went to plug in my Apple TV to the gigabit. I have a jack behind my television. It's really hard to get to. Apparently, the jack sort of pushed in on the plate. So I stick the wire in, and there's nothing for it to connect to on the other side. I'm going to have to move the entire hutch, get back there with a screwdriver, take the plate off, and fix the drop. So it was like, man, does nothing work when you want it to? That thing is set back there. I didn't need it until right now, and I just didn't feel like messing with it. So I'll probably do it the next day or two. I'll go back there and fix it. That TV is heavy. That hutch is heavy. Moving it and getting back there was no fun. No bueno. So I'll have to do it, but I have not yet been able to connect it at gigabit is what I'm trying to say.
I have found one small glitch. I'm sure it's just a software update that's needed, but if I'm using AirPlay from my iPhone to stream music to the Apple TV, I see the music controls on my Apple Watch, but they don't actually work. So I can't pause, rewind, or fast forward on either the Apple TV 4K or the Apple TV fourth generation when streaming music from the iPhone to the Apple TV.
So what are you streaming rather than just using Apple Music on the Apple TV?
Force of habit, right? I'm a long time Apple TV user, and for a while there was, you know, the previous generation, or I guess two generations ago, didn't have Apple Music on it.
So while we're on the subject of things that should exist that don't, remember when there was an actual dedicated Apple TV remote for the Apple Watch, and now when they updated the remote when the last generation came out, they took that away and they've never brought it back?
I don't remember that.
Say that again?
There used to be an Apple TV remote on the watch. You could actually use the old Apple TV remote app before the last update to Apple TV.
Oh, gotcha. On the watch. Okay, yeah. So the original watch, the original remote app. Yeah, the original remote app. Okay. That's why I was like, okay, on the watch. Yep. Yep.
I wish they would bring that back. I don't know. Now that it's fast enough that you could load the thing quickly and actually use it, that would be much appreciated. They didn't revamp the remote. It's still the same sort of non-optimal design, let's say. They did put a little rubber ring or something around the menu button so it's easier to find in the dark. I did find a thing, I'm going to put it in the show notes, where it's, if you ever had a Wii, do you remember how they had the little white glove that went around the Wii controller, like that had the lanyard on it?
Yep. Right.
They make, there's a third-party company that makes something similar for the Apple remote, and the way that it's oriented, the bottom part is always covered in the rubber, and the touchpad is not, so if you do pick up the remote in the dark, you would know right away which end is up, so I'll put a link in the show notes.
I got some of those SideClick remotes. I actually got two of them, one for my Roku remote and one for my Apple TV remote, and since it obviously sits to the left side of the remote, whenever I pick it up in the dark, I just have to basically make sure that, you know, the SideClick buttons are on the left.
Ah, so that's who makes the little case for both of those?
I didn't know SideClick made a little case. This is just, you know, it's like a universal remote with a single row of buttons. So I've programmed, and they're all programmable. They have little white symbols painted on them, so you could dedicate one to channels or inputs or whatever. I could show it to you.
It was a Kickstarter. Brian would know nothing about that.
Well, it started as a Kickstarter, and then I actually bought them after the Kickstarter, like once they went legit, I guess you could call it. But all the buttons on the SideClick remote are programmable, and then they make these different cradles that fit the different remotes, because they make some that fit like the Fire TV stick remote and whatnot. So it basically lets you have one remote in your hand to control other things than just the volume on your television. So I've got mine to where it controls my soundbar, controls the power on the soundbar and the volume on the soundbar, and then it controls the TV power and it controls the TV input, so I can switch it back and forth between Roku and maybe regular TV or whatever, because I also have it where I can control the channels, so then I could flip it between, say, to the antenna or another thing and actually flip channels, if that makes sense.
So I had one of those SideClicks for the original Apple TV. I did the Kickstarter. Of course I did. By the time I got it, the new Apple TV had come out with the new remote, and I think the SideClick is still sitting in a box somewhere. I never even took it out of the box for the original Apple TV, and I think they sent me a coupon for a free one for the next one, but I don't even know if I ever sent it in. Brian, I was going to ask or Jason, on the new remote, can you really tell the new button? I mean, is it feel that different, so you can at least tell left and right, like you've got it oriented up and down correctly?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly prominent, you know, rubber ring around the menu button. Yep.
Nubbin.
Okay, thank you, Johnny, for that.
I just pasted a link in the text if you guys want to see what I'm talking about.
That little Indiglo one is kind of cool.
So yeah, this is basically just a little rubber case with magnets in it and a lanyard if you want to use an optional lanyard. I'm actually thinking about getting this.
And some shock absorption.
Yeah, I'm kind of digging that Indiglo one too.
It's made by a company called Ilago. I think I have the AirPods charging case.
I've had some of their iPhone cases that are made of that same smooth plastic, and they're really nice. I mean, and incredibly cheap. Yeah, that's a good company. I've had some of their iPhone cases.
Well, I would hope just plain old rubbery things wouldn't be terribly expensive.
They're very affordable. They're very affordable. They don't rake you over the coals. It is worth mentioning that we found out this week that iTunes, the deal that Apple made with the studios, you can't actually download the 4K content. You can only stream it. That's kind of disappointing, but I guess understandable.
I didn't quite understand why that was the case. Brian or Jason, did y'all either? I mean, what's the thought there? Is it just too big a file, or I mean, they don't want it on the device?
I think they're worried about people cracking the encryption and having a near perfect digital copy. The same thing they're always worried about, but always exists in the wild. You can go out and buy a 4K Blu-ray today, rip it, remove all the DRM you want, and share it online all you want. It would be trivial to do that, yet they're worried about iTunes as an attack vector. I personally don't understand it.
Right, and the only devices that could really take advantage of it are 4K and 5K iMacs for having the file local to them.
Well,
I mean, yeah, you could put it on Plex and stream it, right?
I mean, anything that'll play H.265 MPEG-4 would be able to play it.
I was about to say my gaming PC would beg to differ. I'm pretty sure I could play it just fine. Assuming, you know, that it was cracked and that's what they're worried about. Now it's time to buy a 4K TV or two so that I can actually take advantage of this stupid thing.
So when is that going to happen?
I'm still doing my research.
You still have to get permission, or you're still doing the research?
Research.
I mean, it's really not a trivial purchase. I mean, you really have to make sure you get the right thing right.
No, TVs last forever. I got you. Yeah. No, you're going to keep this TV for, you know, 3-4 years at least. It's not like an Apple Watch where you're just going to get a new one every year.
Indeed.
So one piece of advice I have on the TV purchase, at minimum, go with something that's got a true 120 megahertz or 120 hertz refresh rate or faster. That's true. There are some that advertise at 120, but they're really 60s that have some kind of digital processor that's spoofing the 120. I can't emphasize enough how important that 120 hertz or better is for having a non-jittery picture.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to get together and sort of coordinate that just to see. Oh, also, there is one thing that we forgot to mention. The Apple TV 4K does not support Dolby Atmos surround sound, but it will in a software update. So they don't have a timeline for it, but it is coming. So if that's a thing that's keeping you from buying it, it is coming.
That's probably just a latent licensing thing.
Yeah, I mean, as we're noticing a recurring theme here, whether it's iOS 11, watchOS, tvOS, they're trying to meet a ship date. And if it's not ready for whatever reason, they'll fix it after the fact, which is fine with software. So long as they committed to it. It's not speculative. They told The Verge it will be coming. So that's good enough for me. So on to the iPhone 8. So I did get an iPhone 8 for my wife on Friday, and she was not very enthusiastic about changing. She doesn't really care about these types of things like I do, but she's still rocking my old 6S, and it's about to be put out to pasture and given to a family member. So I wanted her to get the 8. Got it, and I realized as I was setting it up, they have a new setup feature. I didn't notice this originally. I guess this is also true for watchOS I was seeing, but if you have an existing device that's at the same revision, during the setup process, you can just bring the two devices together, and it'll set the other one up. When I was setting up the iPhone 8, it said, hey, bring the other phone close, and I'm bringing it close. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I never updated her to iOS 11 yet. For whatever reason, because she was busy and loath to change. So it was like, well, okay, I didn't get a chance to really test that out. But when I do get an iPhone 10 eventually, I guess that'll be good to know. They're making the migration process a little bit smoother, I think. So the thing that was sort of annoying for me was the inductive charging. So I did get the Mophi base. I had that before the Apple Store, local Apple Store even had it. And I'm all excited about, this is a perfect use case for her. My wife doesn't plug in her phone near often enough. I'll see it, you know, half dead, whatever. Despite the fact we have chargers all over the place, little, you know, 12 South high rises that she could stick them into. So I thought, great, I'll get her the wireless charging. It'll be wonderful. I'll put it on the nightstand. Perfect. Well, I put it on the nightstand and I discovered a couple of things. First of all, I was hoping that you could charge the phone in either orientation, either, you know, the
front or back,
glass down. Yeah, glass down or glass up. That was not the case. It can only be charged case down. And I thought, OK, well, that's not too bad. Well, I've talked about this before. I have the little wallet sleeve on the back of the phone where she has the, credit cards and a license. And it says it on the Apple support page. Don't put anything between the charger and the back of the phone. In particular, don't put metal. What is my Chase Sapphire Reserve card? Metal. So you can actually, it says there's a possibility of shorting out the chip and the all of our credit cards have moved to the chip. There's a chance that you could fry that chip if you have it on the back of the phone and you try to charge it, which it didn't work anyway. I did try it anyway. I was like, ah, screw it. We'll see.
Oh, wow. I mean, so maybe continued use or something like that. So that basically means that cases that have the credit card slots on the back are kind of out for iPhone 8 or 10.
Yeah, you really don't want to do that, apparently, from what I was reading. So that's kind of an annoyance for me. I've been popping the credit cards out at night. And then, you know, if she makes contact with the phone to the base, once it makes that initial contact, it's fine. Still an annoyance, though, because that was like, this was the whole use case that I got it for, and now I'm kind of annoyed.
Yeah, I definitely get that, yeah.
I think we've got our show title for this week, Case Down, Glass Up.
That's it. That'll be Case Down, Glass Up. That's the way we like to charge. So I did Google it, and, you know, I have seen other people with credit cards that got shorted out. I mean, there is a magnet in the inductive base too. So if you use the stripe, even it could demagnetize that. Not basically something you want to do if you possibly can. I will say that I did download some of the AR apps that have come out, particularly the IKEA one. There was another one, I think, called Magic Plan that I downloaded. And there was a game whose name escapes me at the moment. Maybe it's on my phone. I was trying to test all of these before we recorded, but that may have to wait until the next time. It looks like the game's called The Machines, which is actually really kind of neat.
I'll put out there that the only homework I did for this show was I did play around with the IKEA app a little bit, about 30 to 45 minutes before the show, because I wanted to be able to talk about that. I had installed it My girlfriend and I sat here in my living room and pulled up a bunch of couches and moved them all around and played around with it. And it was really neat. So that's the only one I've played with so far. I can see where, you know, this is the first iteration and it's only going to get better. It's some of the sizing, you know, you kind of have some problems there. I thought it was really cool. I'll have to try out the machines as well. But just, you know, the simple IKEA app was pretty cool.
Yeah, I checked out the IKEA app and also another one that lets you do house plans so that you could make it measure the rooms in the house and then actually turn it to where it's 3D.
It is very exciting. I mean, this is every bit as cool as I thought it was, right? I was using the iPad Pro for some of that too, like the machines game, just so I had a bigger area to play with. You know, it says, hey, point this at your table and give it a flat space, and you do, and then all of a sudden it overlays a game board and overlays the pieces and everything else, and you're moving it around. I'm watching my wife eat dinner, and like her dinner is obscured in my view from the game board. It's just like, you know, oh, wow, it overlaid the game out over on top of everything. I don't know. I'm sure the novelty will wear off, but right now it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I was on the iPad Pro too. So, you know, with the full big, you know, the nicer screen to move around the couches.
I got to say the glass back on the iPhone 8 is really, really nice. Of course, it won't matter because it goes right into a case. When my wife gets it, just like mine, will probably go when I get the iPhone 10, same thing. But I was impressed. It is a nice looking phone. I like the way it feels in the hand.
I've heard it's a little heavier. Any opinions about that as far as compared to the one you've been using or what you're used to? You know, because there was glass versus metal, that it's slightly heavier than the previous versions.
I really couldn't tell a difference. It felt about the same to me. But then again, I guess if I had held one in each hand, it might have been a little more obvious. But it felt roughly the same to me. So Jason, you were going to talk about the photo gallery that Austin Mann did.
Yeah, so we're going to put the link in the show notes, but Austin Mann did a trip to Rajasthan, India, and took a ton of photos and posted in his blog post about all the various features of the iPhone 8 Plus camera. So he gives various samples of the natural light, studio light, contour light, stage light, and then the stage light mono. He does some HDR versus non-HDR, does 100% crop photo demo to show you the amount of additional detail that you get in an HDR photo. He goes through a lot of the portrait lighting demos, does a video on it. Just the camera on the iPhone 8 Plus as well as the 8 are just outstanding. One of the other really cool features was he talks about the slow sync shutter. And what that allows is there's a slower shutter and a slow sync flash that goes with it. And what that does is in kind of dimly lit lighting, it actually allows more light in for a longer period of time. So just the subject that's in focus isn't the only thing that's lit. You can actually like see down a long hallway behind one of his subjects. So I definitely highly recommend going and taking a look at that post and see the kind of quality of camera and pictures you can get off that one.
Every year, his iPhone reviews are really something to behold. I really like seeing those every year. The ones for the 7 or the 7 Plus was really cool. I mean, I'm going to buy those phones anyway, but it's really nice to see what it can do before you get them. So really kind of cool.
The one thing that he does bring up a point though is the fast charging features are not available out of the box with the power brick that comes with the phone, that in order to take advantage of that, you have to buy the $49 29 watt USB-C power adapter to be able to take advantage of the fast charging features of the 8 Plus and the 10.
Yeah, that 5 watt charger they put in there since time immemorial is really kind of a cheap move. At least put a 12 watt or something in there like the iPad has. I mean, it's time to change this up at the very minimum. But I got the 49 watt when I got the first iPad Pro, and I haven't looked back. I love using that thing if you really need to get it juiced pretty quick. So the other thing, of course, and this doesn't affect me, but you MacBook Pro users, there's no USB-C to Lightning in the box, which feels, again, kind of chintzy.
For the iPhone 10, man, it's going to really just not be cool to pay $1,000, $1,200 for a phone, and they're probably still going to stick you that little 5-watt charger in there. I mean, it seems like that'd be the phone where you at least get an iPad charger, the 12-watt in the box. Even that, I mean, like we just said, the 12-watt doesn't even do you as good as, you know, you want that, what is it, 29, right? I mean, that's the one I have. I bought it when I had the 12.9-inch iPad Pro because it just took forever to charge it, even on a regular iPad charger, that the big Pro. So I really enjoy having that 29 watt adapter around, and I've got two of the cables. I've got like the 3 meter and the 1 meter. So depending on where I'm at, what I'm doing. But that, you know, that adds another $80 onto the price there. With your wife's phone, Brian, were you able to reuse like the case that you had before with the credit card slot? So that's the same case she had. You were able to pop it off and right back on the new phone and everything was all good?
Well, since she was moving from a 6S to the 8, I wasn't able to reuse the case. But it is case compatible with the 7, so that when I bought a case...
Okay, that's what I was thinking. Okay.
All the cases were, since it was case compatible with the 7, there was no waiting. I was able to get a case and have it for launch day, in advance of launch day, actually, and have every assurance that it was going to work. Camera cutout is in the same place and everything, so it's not a huge deal. So that was at least a nice thing. So, Jason, why don't you tell us about the iPhone 10 rumors that we've heard about?
What I've been reading today is a little disheartening. The true depth camera is what the supply chain is essentially waiting on right now. They're just not turning those out nearly as quickly as they would like. MacRumors ran out a post today saying that Apple has notified their supply chain to actually slow down certain production of things because they just don't have the true depth cameras yet turn up the assembly line as fast as they'd like.
It's going to be really scary come October 27th. I'm going to be there as soon as that store opens, bickety bam, boom.
Yeah, I'm really nervous about the Verizon upgrade process and it's slowing me down. And I mean, even 15 minutes could cost you weeks in this environment right now because so many people are waiting for the 10 that didn't order the 8. So it's going to be kind of crazy. I mean, I'm getting a text message about every 3 days now from Verizon telling me, hey, you know, you've halfway paid for your phone. Don't you want to come get an iPhone 8? I'm like, delete. Won't you let me sign up for a 10 right now? And I'd be happy about that.
So glad I used Apple's upgrade program. So glad.
We went into that last year. That was the one I tried to do and it didn't work. So that's why I ended up on Verizon's.
All I know is that looking at it this year, they let you pre-qualify before before launch day. So you can already have, I shouldn't even say it because if you haven't played with it and you're looking at it, I'm going to be competing with you on October 27th at 3:01 a.m. But
prank caller.
But it allows you, with the pre-qualification process, you pick out everything and have it staged. So, like, I did that for my wife's phone, even though she wasn't on the upgrade program. It was the same process. So that when I got up on the 19th to order, everything was practically in the bag with the options I wanted, with the carrier, with everything. I simply hit the button, and it was done. Like, it couldn't have gone any faster. So I'm hoping that when the 10 launches, I'm going to have the same experience. I'm hoping. Mac OS High Sierra shipped today. Are you guys excited? Because I'm not.
I'm excited to see it finally drop. I still don't have a regular machine that I'm ready to put it on, like one of my regular machines. I did get it put on a VM today, not booting from it, but I did have a Yosemite VM that I was able to upgrade. And, you know, on the outside, it looks exactly the same, but it did upgrade or convert the file system from HFS Plus to APFS during that upgrade process. And it didn't ask me, you know, whereas in the beta, it did ask you.
Well, so I already installed it on my old cheese grater Mac Pro. Technically, my Mac Pro is not qualified to run this version, but I found a nice BIOS hack that makes the machine think it's the 2010 model, and the 2010 model is still on the approved list. So, you know, my 8-core, 28 gig of RAM Mac Pro is running High Sierra just fine. I haven't really dove into really looking for any of the new features or whatnot. The layout of the Photos app is a little bit different. It looks like it's got some more features that I'm going to need to kind of seek out and play around with. I've heard that there's an improved and updated Notes app. Safari 11 is new. So today's day one. It didn't crash anything. It did upgrade my Soul SSD in the box to APFS while leaving my other spindle drives at HFS.
Yeah, that's right. Only solid state drives will be upgraded.
What about you, Jim? I think you were getting ready to install just before we recorded. You gave me a heart attack. Like, don't do that.
Yeah. I pasted a screenshot of the do you want to install it now into our Telegram chat. And Brian was like, no, we got to record right now. And so I had started the download earlier, walked away from my computer and was just doing things around the house. And so when I came back to sit down to record the podcast, it had popped up that it had finished downloading and it was ready. I'll probably start the install tonight. I mean, this is my work computer, so I'm a little nervous about it. But I mean, look, if it's out, it's here. I might as well, you know, at least I've got the absolute latest MacBook Pro that Apple has made with the fastest processor that they've put in there. So I shouldn't have any problems at all. Like, if anything, it's made for the machine I have. If this is the latest computer they have released, period. So if anything, it's made for to work on mine, knock on this desk. So we'll see once we finish up. I might click install after making sure everything is backed up.
It just goes without saying, just make sure you're confident in your backups before you click go.
So one thing that I am pretty excited about in High Sierra is its support for the new higher efficiency video and image file formats. So it supports HEVC, which is high efficiency video codec, which is also known as H.265, and it supports the high efficiency image file format, which is both a JPEG and GIF replacement. HEVC, the video codec, actually doubles the compression ratio of H.264. So you're going to see that 4K files are going to essentially be about the same size as standard HD files.
All good reasons, but still scary. Did any of you guys use the Photos app, or do you use Lightroom? What do you guys do in that regard?
I use the Photos app. I guess I'm not going to say all the time, but you know, I look at my photos there. They're synced there. I've done some of the face recognition stuff, and I'll set up, if I have any sort of albums, I set them up in that app. It seems to work most of the time. Sometimes I'll launch it and the photo I'm looking for isn't there. It's on my phone. It's on my iPad. For some reason, it's not there. And if I leave it running for like 30 minutes, all of a sudden it catches itself up and it goes and downloads everything. But it definitely doesn't kick off in the background like it should and get everything synced up for me.
Also, one thing for our listeners to note is Apple says that this is the last version of the operating system that's going to have any kind of 32-bit support. So any new apps going to the Mac App Store starting January 2018 have to be 64-bit, and they are not putting the libraries in for the next version of the OS, whatever comes after High Sierra, to have any sort of support for 32-bit apps.
Do any of you guys use any third-party software that you're worried won't work after the upgrade?
I haven't checked on like Adobe. I mean, I'm sure they'll be the first one on the list that will work, but I haven't seen where, like, I use Clean My Mac, and I haven't seen anything from them about it. And you said earlier that Rogue Amoeba updated Audio Hijack, which is what we use to record this podcast. I haven't seen anything about Backblaze or CrashPlan either.
The only thing I'd be worried about is Parallels.
Which version of Parallels are you on, Jim?
I'm on the latest version, the Pro version, so I think it should be fine.
Version 13, the one that just came out?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be fine.
So, I mean, that's the only thing that, you know, obviously Safari works, and I mean, a lot of my other stuff's from the Mac App Store, so that's all going to work. So I can't think of much else that I run that I would have a problem with. Parallels is the primary thing outside of the Mac App Store, and I guess in Backblaze too, but they're usually pretty good about all that.
Well, I can also report that VMware Fusion version 8.5.8, which is what I'm running, it's running fine on High Sierra right now. I've got a Windows Server 2012 and a Windows 10 VM running on it, and it's chugging along just fine.
Even though we record the podcast using Audio Hijack, I actually edit it with a program called Hindenburg, and last year I got bit when I moved to Sierra. It didn't support it. It just would not load at all. So I almost was in a position where I couldn't edit the podcast. Fortunately, I had another Mac that I hadn't upgraded yet, and I was able to do what I needed to do. But I think I'm gonna hold off for a few days and just see. I did notice that Super Duper on their blog said they had a beta working with APFS for High Sierra. So, and that was posted today, the 25th. So that's promising. I think when those tools work, I think I'm gonna feel a little bit more comfortable about moving over to it. But not really in any sort of hurry. I do want Safari 11. That is something I'm wanting for the privacy features and the lack of autoplay. And I am excited about APFS, but you know, switching a file system, especially when you've got one that you depend on, a little nerve-wracking. I will say that it took Backblaze 2.5 weeks to back up my 12 terabytes, but they are backed up now. So if something catastrophic happened, I could at least restore some of that data that would have been otherwise hard for me to get back. So I feel good about that.
And it would not be an episode of Infinite Loopback without Brian mentioning something to do with his gigabit internet.
See, I didn't even mention that at this point. I only alluded to it that I had all of those. I'm a fan of Backblaze at this point. They didn't bail on me like CrashPlan did. So all of my data is backed up is what I'm trying to say. I feel secure knowing that I have good offsite backups.
All of your data Beta or belong to
Backblaze. We really need them as a sponsor. That would be great. I do want to see how AirPlay 2 works, because sometimes I will stream from my Mac to my Apple TV and sort of bypass Plex, and I hope that that works a little bit better than it has historically in the past. I don't know if that's going to make a difference or not, but that would be cool. So anybody have anything else to say about High Sierra?
I'm just ready to upgrade. Just in that I want to use it, especially the new file system. But like you, I'm not in a hurry because I do need things to work. I mean, I depend on my computer a lot, mainly because I do so much remote control work from here. So that's really important. And World of Warcraft. I need World of Warcraft to work.
And for our listeners who want a fairly comprehensive list of what's new and out in High Sierra, Ars Technica does a very good job every year of doing a very thorough overview of the latest and greatest operating system from Apple. It's not quite as detailed as the old John Siracusa reviews, but they're good nonetheless.
Indeed. Well, I think that's about all that I had to talk about this week. I think we covered everything on the list. You guys have anything else you want to discuss before we sign off?
I think I'm good this week, B.
I'll take it. That's a no from you other two. It was a good week for updates. I'll still be happy when the iPhone X comes out.
It's going to be a very long month wait for that.
It really, really is. I believe Tom Petty said it best when he said, waiting is the hardest part. And that is the worst part for me is that, let's say that best case scenario, I do go through with it. I do get the phone. The odds are in my favor. And if I get that launch day iPhone X, I won't even be back to receive it until like 3 days after it arrives. So that's going to, even if I do get it, I'm going to be like, I want it now.
So I look forward to you and Jason playing around with the new Apple Watch a little bit more. And when do you expect in yours, Brad?
I think between the 6th and the 13th of October.
And that was only a half hour delay in ordering it too, from 2:30 right. Local time.
Exactly.
Wow.
That's right. Like I guess it was Jason earlier that said minutes, or I guess it was Jim that said minutes can be weeks.
It really is amazing how every tick of the clock, just every second that goes by makes it more difficult to get those. And I know we do harp on the watch a lot. We do talk about it a lot, but I get a lot of use out of mine. So that's why I'm enthusiastic about it. I really enjoy it. I enjoy it more than I ever thought that I would. And this iteration is actually pretty good.
No, and I think we all know the iPhone so well. We've had the iPhone so long. So many people have iPhones. We know what it does. We know what it's capable of. The watch is still, even in its fourth iteration now, right?
Third.
Fourth?
Well,
third, no. Kind of 3.5, sort of.
The first one came out iteration. In early 2015. Second, it was in 2016. This is the third iteration, so it's Series 3. It is.
Yeah, so, third iteration, there's still so much uncharted territory with the watch, especially now that this is the first time it has LTE. I think it just makes sense that we would talk about it a lot.
Indeed. Well, until next time, fellas, that should do it. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.